right, everyone, and welcome back to your weekly crypto market rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the chart. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And man, what a week we have just had. Bitcoin skyrocketed. We tapped all-time highs. We're seeing a lot of volatility. Things are happening on the charts and the news, and man, we couldn't be more excited to talk about it all with you. And we're always joined by the one and only super producer, Tebow. Tebow, how you feeling over there?
Physically doing great, mentally drained. Yesterday was an emotional roller coaster of all types of sorts, but a perfect day to record the rundown, and we are joined by a super special guest, aren't we, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, we are joined by Tony Edward from the Thinking Crypto podcast, a man who needs no introduction. A lot of you are familiar with him, and we're excited to be able to bring him on and have him dialogue with us about just everything that's happening in the markets. So, Tony, welcome, and it's great to have you.
Brendan, Tebow, great to be here. Exciting day in the market. I'm so bullish, so excited to speak with you guys.
Hey, guys, Tebow here to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all in one. That's right, 3-in-1 for triple the security. It's easy to install. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. It gives you keyless entry, so no more fumbling your keys when you have your hands full coming back from the grocery store. No more worry about the kids losing a house key. No more worry about a guest losing the house key or forgetting the passcode on your door. And for Airbnbers, it's a no-brainer as you can change the passcode at will between renters. It has available fingerprint recognition, and it has AI self-learning chip, so the more you use it, the more accurate it's going to be. You will have no anxiety with the battery charging. It is a rechargeable battery, and it lasts around 4 months, but don't worry, when it's low, it'll give you plenty of weeks' notice, and also, it always comes with a physical key as a backup. There's no monthly fee, unlike other brands that charge you a monthly fee to get your backup recordings. They're always recorded locally, and you will always have access. Customer support for the Eufy Video Lock is 24/7, so you don't have to worry about any issues you have, and it comes with an 18-month warranty. What I love about this product is it's truly all-in-one with the 3-in-1. You don't have to go out and buy multiple parts. It's all in this package with the Eufy Video Lock. So if you're interested in learning more, go on Amazon and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock. Again, that's EUFY Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock. Get complete control over your front door.
Yeah. I mean, let's kick things off talking about Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin hit new all-time highs on most exchanges. It wasn't big. It wasn't a blow-off. But we did just barely tap it. So on Coinbase, we saw a new all-time high of $69,300, roughly speaking. Then we fell all the way back down to around $59,200. And now here we are the very next day, and we're back up to $67,000. So before we get into the charts, I just want to kind of like dialogue between us about what in the world is happening here, and like, what does this all mean? Because a lot of people, they saw the volatility, and I'm sure they saw that $10,000 rejection candle on the daily charts, and they were like, man, like, I don't know the last time that I saw one of those. It was one of the like the biggest rejections in terms of dollar amount in history, and people saw that from top to bottom while it was happening. They're like, all right, the top's in, but here we are, and 80-90% of it has already been gobbled back up, and we're sitting just below the highs again. So like, yeah, I mean, what are we thinking here, gents?
You know, it's fascinating. Nothing moves like Bitcoin or the crypto market. It's incredible. I've never seen anything like this, but it's great because the volatility, you can use it to your advantage to make money, whether it's swinging high or swinging low. And, you know, we are certainly in a bull market. I think 2023 was phase one, 2024 this year is phase two. And one could argue 2025 will be phase three. But I have a thesis I'll share with you guys that potentially we could see the blow off top this year. And Bitcoin is doing something different. I know it's cliche. Every bull market cycle, people say, oh, this time is different. But something different is happening. Bitcoin is going crazy ahead of the halving. Usually that happens post-halving. So it's moving at a very fast rate. A lot of that is coming from the ETF buying and in what's happening with the stock market and the overall macro, because Bitcoin and crypto is correlated. So it's exciting, man. I'm enjoying the ride. And look, I think Bitcoin still has ways to go. I think we haven't hit the all-time high yet. This was just your normal healthy pullback, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I love that you brought up the traditional markets, because for the people who follow things like NASDAQ, NASDAQ had a nasty day yesterday. It was a 400-point drop for all those NASDAQ traders out there. And the day before that, it was 100 points. So, you know, between the last 2 days of trading over here, we saw NASDAQ drop, you know, roughly 500 points off the highs, nasty rejection. And so when people are looking at the crypto markets, it wasn't just Bitcoin that kind of got that, you know, that got hit here recently. Traditionals got hit as well. The difference here is that Bitcoin's recovery has been a lot stronger, which is something that we mentioned.
And Brendan, the funniest part about that is I'm sitting here drinking my coffee 24 hours ago, watching the NASDAQ plummet, and we're all firing off memes, all-time high, Bitcoin 69, like just flooding the timeline. And it's like, ooh, we're better than the NASDAQ. We're not correlated. And then we hopped on that train pretty quick and went down with everybody else, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Tony, yeah. So I actually, here, let's bring this up before we jump into the charting, Brendan. So I'm a big Google Trends guy, Tony, and there's been a lot of debate on Twitter. I'm sure you've seen it. Is the Google Trends, is that still relevant? Because everybody knows what Bitcoin is now. Not as many people might be searching what is Bitcoin. But I stood by and said, I think this is still an important metric, because even if you just want to Google quickly Bitcoin price, which I still do, even though I have all the apps and widgets, I think it's still a testament of people searching for it. And then, so we've basically seen this giant lull up in this dot over here on the far right was the Bitcoin ETF approval. And then would you look at that, the last couple weeks of this wild price action starting to creep back up. So I wanted to get your thought of somebody, a new guest, because I always feed it to Brendan that I'm a big Bitcoin Trends Google guy. So what were your thoughts on that? Is this thing still relevant? And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's still relevant. You know, is it as potent as it was years ago where, you know, it was the most or one of the top strong indicators? Probably not, but I think it's still a great data point to look at. I was actually sharing it with my podcast listeners that we're starting to see an increase in searches around Bitcoin. But to your point, you know, Bitcoin is in the S-curve adoption, right? It's getting more momentum, more awareness, more people are familiar with it. And then you have social media, where people discover crypto and Bitcoin via Twitter, and they may not go to Google. They may actually learn a lot on these social platforms. But you know, you still have a lot of normies out there, and the no-coiners are like, oh man, it's up. It's time to buy, right? Versus that's the wrong way to do it, but you know, it is what it is. But you know, I think it's still a good indicator to look at.
Yeah, and I think that it correlates with like YouTube views as well. I know we've seen a great bump the last couple weeks and months, and I'm curious if you have too.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, and I've talked to other YouTubers and podcasters, and they're like, you know, what's your views and things? How does they work? And I'm like, man, it is highly sentiment driven. When the price is going nuts, the views come in. There's a lot of engagement. When the price cools down, you don't get as much. There is a baseline average amount of views, obviously, that I get, but it's definitely surges when the price is increasing.
Yeah, I mean, we were joking last week that like we haven't fully hit the point of like family members and friends like hitting us up yet. And then TiVo's like, yeah, you know, I haven't gotten anyone. And then mid-recording, TiVo gets a text and his phone starts going off and he has friends that are like, so what's going on with this Bitcoin thing? And it just goes to show that we're like starting to enter into that phase.
Yeah.
But as we talked about earlier, like I don't think we're fully there yet. And with that, I don't think Bitcoin's done running here.
Yeah, I don't think we're at the mania phase, true euphoric phase where everybody's, you know, going crazy. Your grandma's talking about it. Yes, there are hints of it, right? I had a cousin message me when the ETFs got approved. He's like, whoa, okay, tell me, how do I buy? Right? And then another family member as well. But it's not at the same level like I saw in previous bull markets, like 2020, 2021, or even 2017. But we will get there, and we're starting to see hints of it.
I agree with you. And I mean, if we look at the Bitcoin chart over here, I mean, look at this thing. Absolutely parabolic in recent weeks. We're looking at the weekly chart here. So every single candle is going to be its own individual week. And I have this line up top to, for the people who are watching, if you want to see what's happening on screen, you can go over to YouTube. And for all those listeners on Spotify and Apple Music, again, the videos are going to, or the video side is going to be on YouTube. But this line distinguishes where the previous all-time high was right up here and where we currently hit right over here. So if we zoom in, again, I'm going to kind of make this a little bit more granular. I'm going to put us down to the daily time scale so that we can see what's happening. And we can see that, as I alluded to at the beginning of the episode, we barely, you can see the red line just barely getting through this thing, tapping it. And then this is that rejection that we were talking about from $69,300 all the way down to around $59,200. It was about a 14.5% rejection, most of which has been erased. And so if we measure from top to bottom of where we bottomed out yesterday to where we're at today, we're already back up 12% to around $67,000. So for me, this was like a clear sign of like, man, buyers are so, like, they're still here and they're so excited. And the dips that we do get, even what was a very scary rejection, people could not wait to buy the dip and they were looking for any kind of opportunity to do it. And we theorized before this of like, people are going to be excited to buy this thing up. Now we actually got to see it come to fruition.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing to keep in mind, these ETF buyers are sucking up all the Bitcoin in the market, right? There's reports that the OTC desks are running dry. And if there was an opportunity to put a ton of the ETF cash to load up on the Bitcoins, that would have been a great opportunity, right? Because you want to buy as low as possible to make a great return for your clients. So you got all these ETF issuers in the race filling up their coffers with Bitcoin. It's incredible what's been happening. Bloomberg's been reporting on the volume. It's breaking records, man. And I think these Bitcoin ETFs could set all-time ETF records when it's all said and done. It's incredible what's been happening.
Yeah, I love the concept of how rare Bitcoin has become, because like you said, like exchange volumes, the amount of supply that a lot of these exchanges have now, they're at multi-year lows. Like a lot of them, this is the lowest that we've seen their Bitcoin supplies since like 2017, 2018. So that marks like 6-year lows in terms of supply that they have. Same with the OTC OTC desks, as you mentioned. Their supplies are running really low as well. Now, what does this mean? Well, when we pair the lack of supply with the drastic increase in demand, it creates this perfect storm scenario for people who already have Bitcoin. Now, for the people who want to get in on Bitcoin still and they haven't got in yet, it's going to be a little bit harder and you're going to have to pay a little bit more for your Bitcoin. But for the people who have been in this space and they bought the dips, you know, they weren't scared off by the bear market, man, they are sitting nice looking at this whole supply and demand issue that we're having.
Yeah, Brendan, one of the best feelings, I was tweeting about it, is buying the blood on the streets, buying the fear when the masses are running the opposite direction. And then you sit back and you watch a rally like this and this bull market momentum that we're in. And it's just a great feeling, man, to look at your portfolio go up. And once again, it's hard because you have to control your emotions and do the contrarian move, right? The herd is telling you, no, it's going to zero. It's going to crash, right? Time magazine has the cover of the sky is falling and with Bitcoin, crypto is over, SBF, FTX, and all of these negative sentiments. And to go against that, and then, like you were saying, you know, just watch this rally and see the returns being made. It's a great feeling,
man. It really is. And so people are starting to turn their eyes elsewhere and say, "Hey, you know, Bitcoin's it's doing great things. Like, what else is happening in the great world of crypto?" And I think the next valid point that many people go to is Ethereum. So you know, we have the Ethereum chart on the screen here. And Ethereum just passed a major milestone. So again, we're back on the weekly chart here. You can see that this was a previous area, you know, we call it a previous support, new turn resistance, where Ethereum bounced off this area for a couple of weeks, broke down, rejected it. We like to call this a break, hook, and go. And so with this, this was a major area for Ethereum to kind of pass through. If we go back to the daily time frame, we can see that we struggled here for a little bit. However, we broke through this here recently, and now we are closing above this area. Even on the dip yesterday, Ethereum dipped all the way down to this blue line. This is the 20-day moving average. It touched the 20-day moving average and saw a tremendous amount of buyers. In fact, the buyers got it back above this resistance that we were just talking about. So now that Ethereum has passed this resistance, I think the next logical question is, what are we looking for next? Because while Bitcoin tapped the all-time highs, Ethereum hasn't got that opportunity yet because it was lagging a little bit behind Bitcoin. But man, I still think that Ethereum has a very bright future. We've talked about the Den Kun upgrade. We've talked about the ETFs. We're going to talk about it a little bit more here. But you know, the next logical area for me is all-time highs for Ethereum. This was, in my opinion, the last major resistance level that it had. All the junk from the bear market, 90% of it is behind us now. We're through the bulk of the consolidation. And I'm looking at this saying, I don't see why Ethereum can't approach those all-time highs in the same manner that Bitcoin did.
Yeah, absolutely. I am incredibly bullish on Ethereum. And what we've seen historically is that once Bitcoin hits its overbought scenario, and that could be in multiple phases, the liquidity starts to flow down to the alts, and it starts with ETH. So ETH, of course, from a supply standpoint, has good tokenomics, and I think it can hit new all-time highs for sure in this cycle. I'm hoping for 10K plus, but maybe it stops out at 9, right? Never goes as high as the predictions say, and also never goes as low as the predictions say. But I'm bullish. I got my ETH bags in addition to other altcoins. And once again, I think it's important for folks to understand that the liquidity flow, and this has been proven, like from Bitcoin, it starts with Bitcoin and then it runs down the list, ETH and other altcoins. And right now we're seeing like meme coins going crazy, right? That's the liquidity from Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with you there. And I think it raises a valid question of like, is Ethereum or maybe like Ethereum-centric projects like the next play here? Because we've seen what happened with the Bitcoin ETFs, right? They got approved even with the whole Grayscale fiasco of them wanting to sell off just tons and tons of Bitcoin. You know, prices went down briefly, but look at the inflows now. Mm-hmm. So Ethereum doesn't have to worry about Grayscale dumping off in masses, not to the same extent of Bitcoin. And also, Ethereum's a fraction the size of Bitcoin's market cap. So from my perspective, it doesn't have to worry about this mass sell-off event. And it's a smaller market cap project, which means that money can influence it more significantly, can have more volatility. So if Ethereum sees, you know, a fraction of the inflows and activity and volume that the Bitcoin ETF saw in an Ethereum ETF, man, would it be such a positive thing for price? And so that's one of the things that I've been watching recently. And then on top of this, you know, I want to have both of you kind of share your thoughts on this, but there's a lot of other stuff going on in the background. I mean, Ethereum is still deflationary. A lot of people don't realize that. We brought it up on here before. Ethereum is deflationary now. And for 2023, it was deflationary for 11 out of the 12 months. So while most crypto projects are inflating towards their max supply, Ethereum's a little bit different. And I think it's a factor to consider. And then the third kind of catalyst here is actually one that happens in roughly a week, which is Den Kun, which a lot of people are excited about.
Yeah. And then I think this wasn't even a content piece that we were doing. We just had our happy hour on Friday, and it was a virtual happy hour for our team since we're all spread out. And it was a absolute bull market happy hour. Everybody was telling, you know, the projects they were getting, and we landed on Ethereum and Bryce. This was Bryce's thought, was we were talking about this Ethereum ETF possibility. And he brought up a good point, was that there's no proxy stocks like Bitcoin has. You have MicroStrategy, you have Coinbase, you have the miners. Ethereum does not have that at all. There is obviously some, you know, there's the ETF that would get approved and the money would flow into there. But, you know, there's no real proxy stock to go along with that. So along with the lower market cap, you'll have the majority of the liquidity going into these ETFs going right into Ethereum, which I thought was a great point.
Yeah, Wall Street wants it, man. BlackRock, all these guys want it. So they are ready to put money in it. And look, ETH is, like you said, Thibaut, it's not really competing with Bitcoin because it's in its own lane with smart contract technology and things that Bitcoin can't do. But Bitcoin obviously is great, right? Digital gold and so forth. But ETH is getting a lot of adoption. I mean, just look at PayPal. They launched their stablecoin on Ethereum. That's a big vote of confidence. And when you have enterprises building on this platform, even with the competitors like Avalanche and Solana and so forth, they can't touch ETH. And there's people who spread FUD on Twitter, but if you look at the facts, there is true enterprises building on Ethereum, and I'm bullish on it. I'm staking some of it. And the staking component is a big factor too for institutions, because they can earn that passive income off their ETH bags. And I think that's really big for a lot of folks, right? Because they want to earn as much as possible.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And you look at even like Coinbase. They said, hey, we're going to build a layer two. Are we going to use Solana? Are we going to use any of these other people for like scaling solutions? No, we're going to use Ethereum. We're going to use Base as our mainstream avenue to do that. You know, it's funny because I was just on a call with Polygon, literally like right before we hopped in here. And the Polygon team was telling me about how excited they are to see the ETH ETF, but also just everything that's happening from a traditional perspective. Traditional institutions are so interested in Ethereum. And, you know, we kind of just brought this point up, but they were giving me examples, and I can't say all the names here, but like Franklin Templeton is one that I can talk about. Mm-hmm. And they're doing big things over there. They're super interested in building on Ethereum through Polygon, and they're not the only ones. And so one of the things that I can say here is that they were like alluding of like, hey, keep your eye on the news, keep your eye on everything that's going to get released here, because we have just scratched the surface of what traditional financial institutions are interested in. They want to get plugged in. They want to get connected. They believe that in order to survive, like they need to get connected into the space more than just having a Bitcoin ETF. And so there's a lot of cool stuff that will continue to come out, and we're excited to cover it. So, you know, we're going to keep covering the news as it comes out, but man, there are so many things on the horizon.
For sure. And like, I go back to the week that, I mean, the lowest of the low had to have been the FTX collapse, right? And, you know, we're all sitting there watching this unfold. And can you imagine if you could bring yourself back to that time, would you imagine going to Franklin Templeton's Twitter, scrolling down in their pinned tweet, is a penny saved, is a Satoshi earned? Like, like that, this wasn't that long ago, right? Like, I think it's so fun to be in the space, and it moves like what? I mean, 6 months is what, 2 years in this space? It's crazy how things move fast. But just the adoption that we've seen and all those points that Brendan just point out, like, you're crazy to not be bullish on this space right now. Absolutely crazy.
And what's interesting, guys, I don't know when you both got into the market, but essentially we front ran these major institutions. That's I think in the first time in history, we were able to do that. And usually being able to access, you know, equity or assets or whatever it is, you had to be part of a hedge fund or accredited. It was the good old boys Silicon Valley Club. You couldn't get in unless, you know, you had the connections or the capital. Now, I mean, going back to when 2014, when Bitcoin really started to get momentum on exchanges, not when it was first started, but when it got a momentum on exchanges, that people were able to buy some, and then obviously ETH and then other assets. And now the institutions are here like, hey, come buy from us, right? We got some Bitcoin for you.
Yeah, actually, I remembered this the other week. So my intro to crypto was I worked at IBM. So my first job in New York City was I worked at IBM as a project manager, and the smart tech leads, you know, were all talking about Bitcoin. This was 2017, 2018. And I didn't know, you know, anything about it. I just graduated college. And so they set me up with a little wallet, and they each, you know, I bought lunch and they sent me some Bitcoin. I just held on to it. But I remember also like seeing, like, I was still, you know, brokerage, you know, leaning. So I was like, oh, I have a Vanguard. Like, is there anything I can do on there? And they said, yeah, there's this GBTC thing you can buy. So I went on and bought a little bit of GBTC way back then. Then fast forward to even just last year, 2 years ago, you have to be an accredited investor to buy GBTC on Vanguard. And now they're not even offering the ETFs. So I always thought that was an interesting thing to see play out. And I didn't really understand it at the time. And then now we're in this, you know, future world where there's all these ETFs available basically everywhere but Vanguard. And obviously crypto Twitter is making a stand against Vanguard. But yeah, I don't understand the thought of protecting your investors when, you know, sure, I took a risk and made my bets or investments, but it worked out for me based on, you know, learning from people in the space. So I thought that's kind of the opposite of the adoption that we're seeing, that story, but I thought it was, you know, pertinent and interesting.
Well, maybe that's why that Vanguard CEO stepping down, maybe the board was like, dude, what are you doing? It's one thing to say, hey, look, we're take a neutral standpoint, right? And say, hey, look, we're investigating it. We're taking a look at it. We'll get back to you guys. Versus, we don't like this. We're not listening to it. We're kicking all the other Bitcoin products off the platform. Why? Why would you do that? Do you believe in the free market? Do you believe investors are at least smart enough to make decisions for themselves? It's just a bad stance that they took there. And then you were saying, social media was dragging them and people were closing their accounts, moving their funds. Like, where's the self-awareness? Why did you have to take a negative view, right? Once again, they could have just said, hey, you know, we're excited. We're great to see that the Bitcoin ETFs are live and doing well. We're taking a look at it. We'll get back to you guys.
Yeah, I think it kind of like proves the point that these people who are extremely anti-crypto and just refuse to get with the times, like, it impacts more than just them, ultimately, especially these people that are in positions of power, whether it's politicians, whether it's people who are leading these large institutional places. It doesn't really matter. And they're hurting more than just themselves. And so putting the money like aside, right? Not only did they lose out on a percentage of the billions and billions of dollars that are coming through, like, that's profit. You talk about a financial institution, their one job is to produce profit. And not only were they losing out on profit, the other pillar of the financial institutions is market share. And they lost out on both of those. They lost out on the profits and the sheer massive inflow that the first ever Bitcoin spot ETF approvals caused. But also people, it's like you said, they closed their account and they went to competitors. And that is the absolute worst case scenario for a traditional financial institution. If they are losing investors and users to their competitors, and they're also losing out on money at the same time, that's going to anger a few people. So we don't know like the exact story of like what happened with the Vanguard CEO, but I can only imagine and theorized that those two things were part of the conversation. And I can, like, again, this is just the way that I see it going down, is them sitting him down and be like, listen, you know, your personal bias, it lost us money, it lost us market share, you know, we're behind now. And we'll see if they die on that hill. It could be something where he like planted the flag on the hill and he's like, we're going to die on this thing. It could be something now where they go back and they go, well, you know, under new management, we are going to reconsider these ideas. And I hope that they do that. I hope that they do, because a lot of people have Vanguard and a lot of people want to continue using them.
Yeah. And the other company, I think it was Merrill Lynch, owned by Bank of America, they were also hesitant initially, but they didn't come out with a negative stance. Now they are going to be listing it. The news came out last week. So it was just horrible, horrible way to position your company. And Vanguard has a strong brand, and that brand is a bit tarnished now. And like you said, they could have been one of the top, maybe in the top three of inflows because of their brand, because of the number of assets under management. But they screwed it up. They really dropped the ball there.
Yeah, and Vanguard's even known as like the, you know, the spot for ETFs, right? The lowest fees, and maybe, I don't want to say the largest selection. I don't know that for a fact, but I always remember my grandfather always like, hey, get, you know, save your money, put in a Vanguard ETF, low fees, Vanguard ETF. And then, you know, the new generation of ETFs are here, and they you know, they just turn the other cheek on it. Mm-hmm.
That is true. Well, we also see some really cool sectors popping off right now. So we constantly are asked like, hey, what's hot? What's not? Well, let's talk about what's hot. I mean, three verticals in particular, they come to my attention. We have meme coins going ballistic and parabolic. We have artificial intelligence, which we brought up before, but guess what? It's still ripping. It's still just soaring on to the upside. And then we have ETH DeFi, which we alluded to a little bit earlier. So let's briefly show some charts and kind of just get everyone familiar with what we're talking about here, because when we say that these things are making gains, yeah, the charts look quite good indeed. So this is the Uniswap chart. Recently, they came out and they said, hey, we're looking at profit sharing as part of our tokenomics. This was a really positive thing because they are the largest DEX, just period, and they are Ethereum native. So with everyone getting excited about more activity on Ethereum and profit sharing and all this stuff, ETH DeFi is doing good. And the Uniswap chart is just a great example of this. It's up about 130% in the last 2 weeks, but it's not alone. You have Compound, which also had a really nice move up here recently from around $50 all the way to $100. Again, another like 100% move there. Going on to the AI space, we have FET, which, you know, FET was this double-edged sword because they had the bad news come out. People were like, all right, are they solvent? Are they not solvent? Like, they can't pay off some of these, you know, lawyer fees. Like, what's happening here? And people were really nervous about it, and justifiably so. Turns out, you know, they're doing quite well. It looks like they're going to be okay. You know, fingers crossed, you know, I don't jinx us here. But if we're looking at just the fact, just in the past like few weeks, they're up over about 300% in the last month alone. And then you go and you look at other projects. You got Ocean, you got AGIX, you got The Graph, all these other AI-based tokens, and they're soaring as well, which leads us to the third and kind of like final industry before, and I open it up to the other gents because, you know, they might have some other verticals that they see popping off that I missed, but that would be meme coins. And so with meme coins, we look at things like Pepe. This thing, holy smokes. If we just zoom out to its previous all-time high, yeah, you know that crazy run that Pepe did about a year ago? Well, that little pipsqueak move is that run. And this this is what it looks like. So for the people who can't see the screen share, I wish I could tell you how many decimals this thing is, but I'll just tell you the percentage move. It's up about 5 to 600% in the last like 2 weeks here. And it's not alone. You go and you look at like Doge or SHIB or a lot of these other ones. I think Flocky, and I've seen, there's a Solana one. Bonk, that's what it was. Bonk has also had, you know, a crazy chart like this. Bonk's up about 200% in the last week and a half. So meme coins are popping off. And, you know, I just wanted to like raise the question to the group here, like, you know, why do we think memes are moving so fast right now? Because, you know, I typically feel that memes don't always like front run. You know, maybe I just don't remember things right. But from my experience, memes typically pop off more in like the middle of things, in the middle of the run, towards the end of the run. People are transferring funds out of Bitcoin, out of Ethereum, out of their normal staple investments. And they're saying, hey, what like smaller avenues can we get in on to get the same level of volatility that we were getting in traditional cryptos? But this time around, it's a little bit different. Memes are front running with Bitcoin and Ethereum. So yeah, I'll open up the table.
You know, it's fascinating. And I don't hold any like major meme coin bags. I have some Dogecoin just for fun, honestly. I believe meme coins are the riskiest level or tier of coins in the crypto market, but I'm not hating, so please don't trash me in the comments.
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't own any either because it doesn't match my investment thesis. I like to have things that have true value. They have a project and a goal, and they're building out products that people can use and interact with. So I don't own any meme coins. But again, I'm not knocking the people who made money. I mean, heck, right. If you made money off them, props to you. But I agree that they're risky.
Yeah. And I always say the same thing. Like, if you're making money, God bless. You know, I'm happy for you, man. Go for it. But it's very risky. And just understand, it's like going to the casino, throwing it on black, right? it's very, very risky. Now, with regards to AI tokens, I am bullish on AI tokens. I think it was either December 2022 or January 2023, I made a video about my predictions for this upcoming bull market cycle. I said AI is going to be a big narrative in addition to the ETFs, in addition to gaming. And AI has been popping off. Look, I took some profits on FET. I was up over 536%. I had to take profits off the table. Folks, don't forget to take profits. And I have Render as well. So I'm holding some of these AI tokens, and you know, when they pull back, I'm buying the dip because I think they're going to run higher, like we saw with DeFi summer in the last bull market. And look, jumping back to meme coins, It's interesting, like you were saying, that meme coins are running so hard right now. I don't know if that's because there's so much liquidity coming off of Bitcoin to ETH and downwards, but it's not really going to the other tokens, like you're saying. Maybe, I don't know why. Maybe it's some of the retail coming back in. It's hard to tell.
Man, the whole AI space and even things like Render, which is kind of in the deep end space, not only are they solid and we think that they have a bright future, but they're fighting on like a dual catalyst, because them just normally are very bright projects. You know, we think that they have a solid future, but then you look at what's happening with like NVIDIA and OpenAI, they're just kind of furthering the point of like, hey, this stuff is real. The future is bright and we're ahead of schedule. And we saw that with Sora. We covered it a few weeks ago with OpenAI releasing the Sora video. And it was like, man, this whole sector is so far ahead of schedule. And the way that I viewed it is people said, how can I get additional exposure to AI? This has to be the future. And so beyond just buying like NVIDIA or OpenAI or getting, you know, exposure there, I think people are looking elsewhere and they're saying this is too big of an industry to just have like a single avenue to look towards. And so they started looking at crypto. And then we have all these projects that we mentioned, you know, whether it's, you know, Render, whether it's AGIX, FET, Ocean, et cetera. People are looking for different kinds of exposure. And I think crypto offers that.
Yeah. And I think there's a bit of a symbiotic relationship between blockchain and AI. And I'll give an example. Like most recently, the Fox News Corporation partnered with Polygon to put content on the blockchain to help fight fake news and rise of AI deep fakes. So I think blockchain is going to be used to police AI because you have all these applications, all these, like I said, deep fakes and things popping up. It's going to be crazy. I think as we get closer to the election this year as well, you're probably going to see a lot of fake videos. Just yesterday, someone did a video of Janet Yellen talking about crypto.
That was great.
yeah, that was great. But look at that. To the untrained eye, right, or someone just passing by, seeing, scrolling, they don't know anything about crypto memes and so forth. They're like, wait, what? Janet Yellen really said that?
Yeah, and they started doing the editing where they'll start with like a real clip and then, you know, 20 seconds in, and then they, you know, they do a cut and edit or something and it cuts, and with the untrained eye, you wouldn't know, but then it cuts to the AI feed of them going on this rant. And like those have even got me, because it's like a real clip. You're like, okay, what am I listening to? And then bam, starts going off the rails with some crazy stuff. And you're like, what is this?
Wild. And it's only going to get more sophisticated, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen with the rise of different technologies on the internet, it's only going to get better. and we're going to have a fight in our hands with disinformation and so forth. But blockchain is a solution. And I think there's a nice convergence of these two things happening with the some of these crypto projects.
Yeah, we saw a really funny story. You know, it's kind of funny. I think it's a little bit funny. It came out a few weeks ago of, I believe it was this company over in China. And they had the largest AI scam to date. And essentially what happened was a guy hopped on a call and he was getting emails of like, hey, like send this money over to X, Y, and Z. And it was like, he was thinking that it was his higher ups. And he went to them and he was like, hey, you know, are you sure? Like, let's hop on a meeting and just like make sure that you really want me to send this money. Anyway, it was like his executive team and like a couple other people, and they were all deep fakes. And so he's on a call with what he thinks is his executive and a bunch of other people from his company, but they have deep faked and copied a whole team at his company. And so he's sitting on a call with them, talking to him, thinking that it's them. He goes, all right, you know, like if you guys are telling me to do it, then I'm talking to you just like we're all talking, and I'll do it. So he does it. And then they come back to him and they're like, what in the world are you doing? He's like, what do you mean? You told me on this call. And they're like, what call? Turns out the company finds out it was all a deep fake scam. And it was like the largest one in history. I think it was over $50 million or $30 million or something. It was a lot of money. And it just goes to show that there is a lot of creativity and it's becoming more prevalent. And we want everyone to stay safe from stuff like that. It's more than just hopping on a video. It's more than just getting an email. It's more than just getting a social media or Telegram message now. We've also seen scams happen with phones where people call in, they deep fake a loved one or a friend or a family member's voice, and they call in and they're like, hey, I need you to send me money. Or, you know, maybe it's a video or maybe it's whatever. So, you know, really stay vigilant out there. And I think that, you know, ironically, AI and blockchain have the ability to combat these negative things. And since the space is so new, people are looking at ways to abuse it, but the solutions always arise. And so it's not something that I'm too concerned about, but I think everyone just needs a friendly reminder to stay vigilant. You know, don't send crypto to people. You know, support messages shouldn't be messaging you, asking for keys to your wallet and things like that. So really, really be careful out there. We don't want anyone to end up in one of those unfortunate situations. Well, before we go here, lads, I want to just kind of open up a round table and talk about just everything that is happening. It can be on-chain metrics, it can be charts, it can be news, it can be thoughts, sectors, specific projects, you name it. I mean, just like, what do we see happening in the space here? And, you know, like, what are our outlooks for the rest of the year? Because, you know, we've touched on this a little bit, but I think all of us are pretty optimistic that we can continue higher and that there are great things to come. But yeah, let's open up the round table here.
So I want to share a thesis I have, and I actually shared in the chat here a link to a recent newsletter that I wrote that could Bitcoin see the all-time high blow off top this year? And the reason for that is more of the macro factors. So it's a presidential election year. We've often seen markets do well, and the Fed is looking to cut rates. But what we've seen historically, if you scroll down a bit, when the Fed actually cuts rates, the markets actually start to tank a bit. Now, that's in the short term. There's a huge correction that happens. Mm. But then it levels off, and then, you know, the lower rates start to bring in cheaper capital. So yeah, there's the chart, right? We see a pullback. So could markets be front-running that? And markets are forward-looking. So with the stock market moving up, and yes, we have a pullback now, you know, that's normal. Could the stock market and crypto rally so hard this year because they know maybe after the election, that's when the pivot's coming and the rate cuts, because the Fed may not want to cut rates before the election to show any type of bias or put more volatility in the markets. So could it happen after the election and that's when we start to see, you know, a major correction heading into the bear market? I think that's possible. This is just a thesis and not a guarantee. So Bitcoin could potentially, with the ETF buying that's happening, and because it's ahead of schedule right now, the data showing, right? Could it hit a blow off top this year? I think that's highly possible. We'll have to wait and see, but you know, it's more of the macro factors is what I'm looking at and the correlation with the crypto market.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a great point. Everyone's always looking at like, how can I time this thing, you know, roughly well, right? No one has the perfect answer. No one says, you know, I know the exact date. And historically, we have seen that Bitcoin typically tops out between 12 to 18 months after the halving. So about a year to a year and a half after the halving. And I think it's worth looking into these things because like you said, this isn't our average run so far. You know, we're hitting all-time highs before the halving. That's something that we like really have never done before. This is one of the fastest recoveries that we've seen. So I think it's worth asking the question of like, are we ahead of schedule here? And if so, you know, if we are ahead of schedule, does that move the top date a little bit closer instead of that normal 12 to 18 months afterwards? And so I think you make a great point. And this is like one of those times where like this is the time to do the research on that stuff, not, you know, 12, 8 months after the halving has happened, the time to do that research is now and say, okay, what are my situations? What are the likelihoods? You know, what are the areas to look out for? And it seems like everyone has their eyes on $100,000, right? It's the big fundamental. It's the big like area that everyone wants to watch out for. So, you know, I see the question in the sidebar here, TiVo, you know, when will Bitcoin hit $100,000? And number one, is that possible? Because I was just debating this with a friend literally last night. He goes, I don't think 100K is possible, not this cycle. And I said, well, I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think that it is. So I'll open it up before I rant too much about it because it's a can of worms that, you know, once I open it up, I might rant.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think 100K is much easier now than it was last cycle. I mean, just look where we're at, right? And the catalyst, the huge catalyst, which can't be ignored because the volume, the data is there, is the ETF buying, man. Wall Street is here. And I know people have been hearing things like these narratives for a long time, but they're actually here. The reality of the situation is this is not a narrative anymore. They are literally buying. Look, I was a bit skeptical too. Like, we'll see what happens with the ETFs. But the amount of buying, the amount of volume is insane. And if you've been following like the guys from Bloomberg, Eric Balchunas and James Seifert, who have been covering this, and I interviewed Eric recently, compared to other ETFs, it's wild, man. This thing is performing really well.
It is. You know, we had James on the podcast just a few weeks ago. And, you know, he was talking to us just about everything that is expected and that's happening. And, you know, I think we are passing expectations. I think, you know, Tivo, correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, we are expecting between $90 to $100 billion in inflow volume this year, again, over the whole course of this year. And we're already about the $50 billion mark, which is wild. We're, you know, just over two months into the year. We're at the beginning of March. And we're already halfway there. So, man, what a smashing success. And I love the analogy of like, compare it to things like gold and compare it to other ETFs in the space. I mean, just the other week, we saw the Bitcoin ETFs having more individual trades than leading indices like the QQQ or SPY, for example, which is wild. We're talking about some of the most household, largest traditional indices that everyone's familiar with when it comes to like NASDAQ and S&P. And the Bitcoin ETFs are having more individual trades than them. Like, what a wild concept. If you would have told people that this would happen a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, they would have said no way.
Yeah. And look, the other factor is that we're still like in the first inning of this thing. There's tons of RIAs and wealth managers who haven't allocated yet. And in fact, BlackRock, the guys at Bitwise, I've been talking to them. They are now going out and saying, knocking on doors like, hey, guys, we got this ETF. Here are our fees. Here's how it works. So the process of awareness building is still happening. And just imagine what it's going to look like from a year from now. So there's incredible upside here. The other factor, and I read an article from BlockWorks yesterday, the state of Arizona here in the US is looking to allocate some of its treasury funds into crypto. Guess which method and path they're going to go down? The ETFs. It makes it so easy for government agencies, corporations, and much more to allocate. So I think that's what's happening. When the data eventually comes out as to who's been buying, I think people are going to be surprised.
I wonder if I think 100K is coming eventually. I do think, so this was Steve Weiss, CNBC halftime. He's on the halftime show with CNBC. He has been touting. Now, a clip went mini viral of crypto Twitter of him yesterday, kind of basically talking smack about Bitcoin, not being a believer, and people were all over him like, oh, this is TradeFi hating on Bitcoin. But I think a lot of those people don't actually know that he's been touting his Bitcoin bags for months. He's been a holder. He's been an investor. He's a trader. So, but he's open. He's like, I don't believe in it. This thing's got no value, but I own it and I'm trading it. The momentum and the technicals, I like it. So I think you have a lot more of those type of people holding Bitcoin right now than what we even believed before the ETF. They were front running it. In my opinion, and you know, my humble opinion is, I think that 100K is such a psychological level that when that does hit, you know, there could, you know, nothing goes straight up, but you know, like we saw yesterday, there's going to be a lot of volatility on the way. And I feel like some of these, you know, major money managers that are true traders, they have targets, and when those targets hit, there's going to be selling pressure. And you know, obviously we hope the dip buyers come in and we keep going higher. I know one of my favorites on Twitter is Tom Lee from Fundstrat. He's one of my heroes. He's educating the people the good word of Bitcoin all the time. And he's looking at, you know, 100 to 150K by year's end. So I like riding with a guy like Tom Lee, but I definitely don't think it's straight up.
Yeah, great point. And to your point that 100K is going to be a huge psychological barrier. I'm telling you, there's going to be so many people waking up. What, Bitcoin's $100,000? Whether you're institutional Wall Street or you're the average Joe or Jane walking down the street, that's going to be huge. That number, $100,000 for this asset. Many have maybe heard in passing, maybe it bought at the wrong time and sold. It's going to be incredible. I'm actually super excited. I want to see the reactions from people. I know I'm going to get phone calls. I know people are going to be hitting me up who I've not heard from in a long time. I'm going to be so excited for that. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many positive things to look forward to here. And it sounds like we're all pretty optimistic about the space. So I don't know about everyone in the chat, you know, everyone that's watching here, all the viewers. I can't speak for you. I can't give you financial advice, but I can tell you that I am looking to buy the dips. I think crypto and blockchain have such a bright future. And Tony, we really appreciate you coming on. You know, for all the listeners out there, where can they follow you and get plugged into everything that you're doing as well, man?
Sure. So it's Thinking Crypto Podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, on Twitter X, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. So you can just search for Thinking Crypto or Thinking Crypto Podcast. And yeah, appreciate the support. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully the first of many. You know, we enjoyed you coming on here, and I'm sure the audience did as well. But that's going to wrap us up, everyone. Again, if you want to stay informed with everything that's happening in the great world of crypto, this is going to be one of the top places to do it. We have brilliant minds like Tony coming on. We constantly are talking about just everything that's happening, from the technicals on the charts to the fundamentals in the news. So if you don't want to sift through all the noise yourself, we think that this is not a bad place to do it. So thank you all for watching, and we're going to see all of you at the same time, same place next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save